Translation. Kamalaya Sureshaha Vidhama Yanegitam Amshakam Shaka Na Tatsvarupam Patak Isha Mahanilaha. Neither I, nor Shiva, nor Brahma, nor the Ashwini Kumaras, nor Narada, or the other eight sages who are Brahma's sons, nor even the demigods can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord. Although we are part of the Supreme Lord, we consider ourselves independent, separate controllers, and thus we cannot understand his identity. This verse connects to the previous verse by the statement that was illustrated by the statement at the end of the purport, previous purport, where the last two sentences Prabhupada writes, therefore, the absolute truth is easier to understand for a devotee than for jnanis who simply speculate to understand Vasudeva. Lord Shiva confirms this statement in the following verse. So, it's a little tricky. A discerning reader of the Bhagavatam should understand in this way. This verse is illustrating that point. The previous point is about the feature of duality and the relationship between the features of duality and their origin, the absolute truth. And by speculation, the jnanis can't understand that relationship. So because they can't understand the relationship, they say weird things, like it doesn't exist, it's false. That's one example. One of the slogans Mayavadi teaching is Brahman Satya Jagat Mithya. Brahman is true and Jagat, the manifested realm, is false, true and false. So this doesn't exist. That's the statement. What is it? It's non-existence. It's just an imagination. It's not, the Vaishnava says differently. It's an energy of Krishna, the particular configuration of which is temporary and therefore illusory. It appears to be what it is not, but it exists, and it exists as an energy of the energetic. My bodies don't like that idea, because if you have energy and energetic, then you have two. And their doctrine is you can't have two, you can have only one. So what do you do with this? You give it a bad name. It doesn't exist. It's false. There is one thing that exists, and that's Brahman. This isn't Brahman, so it doesn't exist. That's their program. So by speculation, the conclusion, and continuing from the previous series of verses, those who don't have transcendental knowledge coming from specific succession in devotion to Krishna cannot properly understand the creation. They can't understand the dualities of creation, the whole program. They don't understand it. They cannot understand it. And Prabhupada ends the purport by saying, Lord Shiva is confirming. So Lord Shiva, in this morning verse, is including himself and Lord Brahma in the category of non-devotee jnanis. Well, in one sense, that's an expression of his humility, because in fact, he does. And he is a devotee of the personality of Godhead. And Lord Brahma is certainly a devotee of the personality of Godhead. In fact, both of them two of the four sampradayas, where through the disciplic succession, the absolute truth is disclosed. They're the heads. Which have a word from out, they certainly know. Lakshmi is not mentioned in this series, nor is are the four Kumaras. The Ashwini Kumaras are mentioned. The Ashwini Kumaras are physicians in the heavenly realm, and they have mystic powers, and they also have transcendental knowledge. They were given transcendental knowledge by Dadichi. There's a whole description of that. So they're possessing transcendental knowledge. We discussed this last night. What is transcendental knowledge? It's the distinction between matter and spirit, and the details of that, how you apply that in life, in practical activity. So detached work is included. Karma yoga is included. Or karma phala tya, working without attachment to the fruits of work. So the Ashwini Kumaras have that knowledge, but at least Lord Shiva is saying they don't know the Supreme. They're not situated in pure devotion. Because the demigods, or the sons of Lord Brahma, they're mentioned here. Brahma, Putra, the sons of Lord Brahma. These are great sages. Atri, Brinku, and Angira, and great personalities. So, they have transcendental knowledge also, but they're not primarily devotees. They have transcendental knowledge, but they're not primarily devotees. Narada is also mentioned. My goodness, he's certainly a devotee. He's in our disciplic line. He's the preceptor of Vyasadeva. He certainly has knowledge of Krishna. The tiny living entity cannot know the unlimited, the infinitesimal cannot possibly know the infinite. It's just very simple mathematics. That which is infinite cannot be known fully by the infinitesimal. But to the degree that the infinite discloses himself to the infinitesimal, to that degree, the living entity can know. That maybe thus we can know Krishna to some degree. But the agency of knowing him is through bhakti, or through the disclosure of the absolute truth, who decides to disclose himself to one who is his devotee and withholds his identity from the speculator. He's not to be understood by that way. Prabhupada's example is very simple. In the dark of night, if one wants to look for the sun, they may think, okay, let me get a flashlight and look for the sun. And this, you can't find the sun that way, unless it's being stated in the previous verse and this verse. The absolute truth cannot be understood by speculation. You can't find the sun by a flashlight. Not how the sun can be understood. When the sun rises, then you can see the sun. When the absolute truth discloses himself, he can be known. And he discloses himself to his devotee. Bhaktyamam avijana tiyavanyas chasmi tattvatara. He can only be truth, tattvatara. Factual understanding. Through the medium of bhakti, Krishna discloses. And not otherwise. That's his prerogative. Naham prakasha sarvasya. Yogalaya samadhita mudho yam nabi janati. Krishna indicates he does not disclose himself to the mudhas, to the foolish people. He discloses himself to the devotees. So one remains foolish by the process of separation. And so just once again, he's speaking in a humble way about himself. He's included Lord Brahma Brahma and Narada, who certainly know the absolute truth, as does he know the absolute truth because of their devotion. But the emphasis is upon, from the previous verse, the inability to understand the truth by speculation, the absolute truth by speculation. And then, one other point that's made in the purport is Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity. He's in a special category. He's in his own category. There's Vishnu and Vishnu Tattva. The expansions of Lord Vishnu, the expansions of Krishna are in that category, Vishnu Tattva. And there's many, as the reference from Ramaswami is indicating, unlimited numbers of such expansions. Departure Eva, that verse from the Ramasamhita, from one candle you can light many candles. And each of the candles has the same illumination as the one from which it was lit. That's the example given in the Ramasamhita. So there, the expansions of Lord Vishnu are unlimited in its own category. And then there's another category, the living entities, Jiva Tattva. So Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, the numbers of living entities are similarly unlimited. Or they're finite, but you can't count them, there's so many. So unlimited, in a loose sense of the term, unlimited living entities. And then there's another tattva, that Shiva tattva, and his position is he's neither the ordinary living entity nor is he a Vishnu. And in Vaishnava circles, it is said there are two topics that are most elusive and complex and difficult. Those two subject matters are Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva. Very elusive. And it's a long, complex subject to really get into the detail of Lord Shiva. But in very simple language, take something complex and try to reduce it to something simple. Language of Sri Ramasamhita identifies Lord Shiva in the following language. He's the dim twilight reflection of the absolute truth. That's one description given of him. So what's twilight? What does that mean, twilight? It's like dusk or dawn. It's neither day nor night. Day, day. Night is night. And in between day and night, that's twilight. So, Lord Shiva is the twilight, dim twilight, reflection. So there's the object, and there is the reflection of the object. So, that's one of the ways in which he's identified. Dim twilight reflection. His name, one of the names from Sri Ramasamhita, is Chambu. And Chambu is the name of a person who is the glance of Mahavishnu. So there is Mahavishnu, and there is the glance of Mahavishnu. So this is one of those things where one could propose, well, since Mahavishnu and the limbs of Mahavishnu are non-different than him, Angani Yasha Sapalendriya Vrishimati, we say everyone, the men's of the Supreme Court are not different than him, and they're interchangeable with all the other men's. So one might argue, or reason, that the glance of the Supreme Court should also be not different than the Supreme Court. It's a logical conjecture. But there's a difference, so there's a oneness, and there's a difference. And the difference is the glance contacts ritual energy. Literally, the glance, shambhu, impregnates, more than contacts, impregnates ritual energy with the living entities, like, you know, the souls, like impregnation, where the father impregnates the mother, the soul is transferred through the male to the female. Exactly as the act of procreation in the worldly sense, the primordial procreation is he's the eighth instrument. There's other things spoken about Shambhu and how he's different from Vishnu. In Bhaktisiddhanta's language, it's like, you know, very technical. He partakes of the divine potency. So Lord Vishnu never contacts material nature, Lord Shiva does. Lord Shiva, in contact with material nature, partakes of a portion of the deluding potency. Language. Second distinction is the non-plenitude of the jiva. He partakes of a part of the non-plenitude. So, Vishnu is full, and Lord Shiva is tainted by the non-plentitude nature of the jiva, and tainted by the deluding potency of Maya. But he's not in the category of living entity, nor is he in the category of Vishnu. He's likened to, again, in Sri Brahma Samhita, that famous verse that compares Lord Shiva to dahi, or yogurt, which is not different than milk, but milk that's in touch with the souring agent is transformed to yogurt. And once yogurt, you can't get yogurt to go back to being milk. So Lord Shiva is likened in that way to not different than a milk product, but different in that it's, and that souring agent, as with milk touched by a souring agent, becomes yogurt. The souring agent is these two things. The non-plentitude of the jiva and the deluding portion of the deluding potency of Maya. That's the souring agent. Those two aspects. And therefore he is no tattva, shiva tattva. And it goes, keeps going, it gets more complex. But so he's in his own tattva. And then he also expands, he does different things, he resides in different places and gets really complex. But Prabhupada wants us to understand this from the purport, that although he's likening himself to the ordinary living entities, we should understand he's not. So to go back to something that I said earlier, he's likening himself to a non-devotee, but he's not. He's definitely a devotee, as are Lord Brahma and Narada. So he's characterizing himself and them in that way, in that such persons who are not devotees can't understand Krishna. Then there's one other point that I'd like to mention. In the verse, the last line of the verse reads, although we are part of the Supreme Lord, We consider ourselves independent, separate controllers, and thus we cannot understand its identity. This delusion ultimately goes back to some of the previous messages of the Eka, if you remember that term. Seeing oneself separate from the Supreme Lord is false ego. We, like Lord Shiva, at least according to the language of Sri Brahma Samhita, he partakes of a portion of this false ego. In fact, he's the emblem, the language of Sri Brahma Samhita, of false ego. And we partake of a part of some of that nature of him, false ego nature. And what is the essence of that false ego, like really, really, really simple essence of it, is, well, one can say, I have a misconception of who I am. But what is the nature of that misconception? I have a separate existence. I, the sense of self, ego, exists separately from. And because I exist separately from, I'm entitled to separate enjoyment from. That's the deluding potency. That's the upkatak is the language in Sanskrit. Seeing oneself separate. You know, like a separatist. Or falsely thinking oneself independent. We're not. That which enables us to think falsely that we're independent is false ego. And we get it from Lord Shiva, according to Sri Brahma Samhita. But anything that can be in the material world, kirtan is still going. Every living entity in the material world, I mean, whether it's a little bug, or the bird, or the plant, or the animal, or the human, or any soul that's embodied within this material realm, has false ego. Otherwise, you can't do material activities without false ego. That should be a clue. Hey, if I can just like dissolve false ego, small thing, if I can just dissolve false ego, then I can be in spiritual activity. Or say it the other way. How is it possible to be in spiritual activity if I'm still holding on to my false ego? So the two don't go together, false ego and spiritual activity. Because spiritual activity is in relation to the Supreme Lord. And material activity is separate from the Supreme Lord. And, you know, I can't do that without false ego. As long as I'm maintaining false ego, entering into spiritual activity and the fruit of that spiritual activity, loving attraction for Krishna and entrance into the spirit, going back to Godhead, it's not going to happen as long as I hold on to false ego. And false ego is pretty tenacious. Like, even if you, like, for example, the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that to overcome our great misfortune of not having attraction to the holy name, Durdhaya, Idrisha, Mahajani, Nama, Radha, it's humility. Trinadati, Sri, Chaitanya. So, supposing we try to be humble, and then what happens? We get proud, oh, I'm humble. It's a stain if this doesn't go away. Or supposing you get smashed. It happens sometimes. Krishna gets very kind and he smashes. And then one feels, oh, I smash. It's not so much feeling humble. I mean, there's an opportunity to feel humble. But it doesn't last long. A little example of this is New York City, got home. I saw it. For a while. It was amazing. I was not in New York, and for a month, I purposely stayed away because you really couldn't, like, people were, anyway. From Houston Street down, they had police barricades, and no one could go there unless they had a pass showing that they lived there and they had to go there, and otherwise it was like quarantine. And anything north of Houston Street, people were humble. I mean, New Yorkers are very passionate. So instead, and normally the program is when there's crosswalks, they don't wait for the light to turn green, say, you know, walk. They walk if there's not a car coming. And then, you know, they stop if there's a car coming, and then it's green, and they walk. So that changed. Instead of people walking when they shouldn't walk, they were building, constructing, or they set up little shrines at every crosswalk, you know, like a little prayer place. And in different religions, like, you know, Christianity and Hinduism and Islam and, you know, this and that, but going this way and going that way at every crosswalk, they would pray to cross the street safely. It went on for about a month. Because it's north of Houston Street, there's a park, right near Fifth Avenue, maybe, you know, big, right in the middle of Manhattan, and Sixth Avenue cross, they cross, right, or Seventh Avenue, excuse me, Fifth Avenue. Fifth and Sixth cross right there. So, at Union Square Park. So that became a place where gospel singers and different people would come, prayer groups, and people chanting Om, like, you know, it became like a spiritual haven. So, Chandrasekhar Swami, we made a plan, just one person, one devotee, and no percussion instruments, just harmonium. And he sat and sang very softly, Hare Krishna mantra. Like that's our prayer. That's our prayer groups. And a little sign that said, you know, condolences for the people deceived, and if anyone would wish spiritual counseling, you can please come speak to the individual here or in the evening at 26 Second Avenue. Because people like their sense of we're impenetrable, we live in New York, the bubble was burst. They were vulnerable. So they became very turned to God. And then, literally 1 month later, after that happened, we decided to go with a group of devotees. Not too many. It was like 15 or 16 devotees. And we all had little mats. We sat on the mats and cushions. And one mridanga softly played, one pair of kartals softly played, one drum, and we sat down to sing. And it reminded me of the 60s, although it was 2001. As soon as we sat down, a whole crowd of people came around. Like, a crowd of people. We didn't even start singing yet. But they knew what we were going to do. And we started singing, and they sat down with us. Some of them, you know, like, the fashion models sat over there with the ladies, with their fancy skirts and the whole thing. They just sat and chanted. The businessmen with their suits, they sat with the devotees and started chanting. And other people were standing and crying and, you know, calling Krishna's name with great feeling. And it was amazing. It was amazing. We didn't stop to speak. Sometimes we would do that. We didn't. We just softly chanted. It wasn't like, you know, tempo. It was really soft, gentle chanting. People were crying. places are vulnerable when, you know, when you're smashed, then there's more of a tendency to turn to God. So it's good fortune to be smashed in that regard, at least. But fast forward in time, and, you know, business as usual. Now, currently, this is like a little current news report from this company, where Ram Roy Prabhu, nice Brahmacharya, disciple of Sastra Maharaj, has dedicated himself to just singly, you know, he has a couple of people that are kind of like his four people, but he goes to the same Union Square Park. You don't need in New York, if you don't have sound amplification, you don't need a permit because it's free speech. It's protected by the First Amendment. So they just go on it without acoustical kirtan, without amplification, they just chant. And, you know, there's sometimes 6 people, sometimes 10 people, sometimes 15, sometimes 30 people. They come from work, they go from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And he started it last summer, and it was so popular, he just kept going, and went right through winter time. Like, you know, 360 people, when it got really cold, they went in the subway. And without sound amplification, it's legal. Anyway, and some people are, like, you know, they're very attached to the chanting of the holy name. And it says many reports I've heard is business people come by, these are New Yorkers, and they stand and see what they're doing, and they sense this is spiritual. So they, you know, reach in their pocket, give a donation, a little box, and walk on. And then sometimes they take literature, and it's affecting the lives of people on a daily basis. It's really, really nice. It's really neat. So back to the purple. Seeing oneself separate is what disqualifies one from seeing Krishna. And say the converse. Seeing oneself as subordinate to and dependent upon Krishna and therefore his devotee, and acting in that consciousness is the qualification for understanding Krishna. That's what Lord Shiva is saying. He's attributing the qualification for knowing Krishna to King Chittaketu, although he also has the qualification himself. But the demigods and other personalities similarly situated who, they're devotees, but they see themselves as independent controllers also. There's a mix. That's why they're demigods. That's why they're not in Vaikuntha. They're devotees, but they have this other false ego thing going on. And because of the false ego thing going on, they don't understand properly. They go to Krishna when they have a problem, and they're kind of, you know, not so Krishna conscious when they don't have a problem. So Krishna gives them problems and helps them become Krishna conscious. There's troubles in the heavenly planets. There's turmoil in the heavenly planets. Although there's lots of optimism, there's also pride and turmoil. So it's not, you know, not a place to go. An intelligent person understands that. And it's all temporary. Another reason. So, transcendental knowledge, confidential knowledge, more confidential knowledge, most confidential knowledge is available to the devotee. And an imperfect understanding of the confidential knowledge may be available to the jnani, but not sufficient to stay fixed in transcendence, because it's vimukti manimas, we heard in the previous verse. They think themselves liberated, but because they haven't taken shelter of the personality of God, that they can't stay in that position, they come back to the realm of morality and open hospitals and schools and philanthropy. Prabhupada was not fond of that kind of philanthropy. He was fond of Krishna conscious compassion, including people like Krishna conscious compassion and other forms of Krishna conscious compassion where attention may go to the necessities of the body, but that the consciousness behind that act is bringing soul to Krishna. And so directly within the activity and the consciousness behind the activity is bringing soul to Krishna. Well, I'm going to stop there. See if there's any discussion or comment on this message here. Yes?
Desires. And she does, under the indication of his desire.
So time as we know it is activating material nature. But in, so your question specifically is, the Buddhists in the river to your job and the, not exactly Maya bodies, because they're just imagined liberated, but the Brahma bodies, the souls that merge with the Supreme, their individuality is still there, but it's not manifest. Now, specifically false ego. There's no matter in the spiritual realm, but it's not present. But, you know, the separate, the sense of separate from the Supreme Lord is certainly there. So it's some, I don't know how to say it properly, some kind of incompleteness of knowledge and realization of one's relationship with the Supreme. Why? Because of rebellious spirit. Why would one be the Brahma Jyoti in the spiritual world? I don't want to surrender to Krishna. So there's a place for them. And so specifically, is false ego active? Not active. Is it present? It's not present as we know it here. There's all this language in Bhaktisiddhanta's description of creation that's in Brahma Samhita, and he uses this term primordial and prototype. So the seed for that is there, but seed in a dormant condition, something like that. Not active like we know false ego is active over here. But the absence of submission to the personality of Godhead indicates a sense of separateness. So something, it's not that, and it's not the absence of that totally. It's something in this seed-like condition.
Dissimilar from how we regard Krishna determines the, you know,
they fully understand his position as an unelected voting, and they're fixed in seeing him in that way. And that's their conduit to love for the personality. other one. It can, one might say, those who become attracted to Lord Chaitanya are originally in this Rajasame position. That's why they become attracted to Lord Chaitanya, and others don't become attracted to Lord Chaitanya. One can make that kind of argument. Ashok is what it is, and associates of Lord Chaitanya enter into Goloka Vrindavan, Rajabhakti. And the other is, the spiritual world is not static, it's ecstatic. One can become stimulated. Now go to the other side. Followers of Lord Chaitanya, some of them were Ramabhaktas. Rani Gupta was a Ramabhakta. At the same time as devotee Lord Chaitanya. Right? Lord Chaitanya honored him for his Ramabhakti. At the same time, he was a lover, a deep, ecstatic lover of Lord Chaitanya. But he saw Lord Chaitanya in a particular way, which is not exactly the Vrajaprema way. Because Ayodhya, according to Vrihat Bhagavatamrita, is below, it's in the Vaikuntha realm, it's not in the Goloka realm. It's above the Vaikuntha realm, but not yet in the Goloka realm. Vrihat Bhagavatamrita just spells it out in detail, the whole chapter about it. So he's a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So is it possible for one to be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya and be in a Vaikuntha mood? Or Ayodhya mood, certainly. With Maragupta and Ayodhya mood. Because Lord Chaitanya is everything. So with that, one could argue, or reason, that well, not all followers of Lord Chaitanya are going to be Vrajabhaktas. And according to their Swarup, they're going to be whatever they are. Through the association of Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan movement. Now go back to the other one. Well, Krishna's question is, so, one could make an argument for both. And it's up to Krishna. Not like, oh, I want that one. It's up to Krishna. But there is, according to this other one now, according to Rupa Goswami, there's a qualification, a prerequisite for entering into Raja Bhakti, and that's tankering or stronger greed, lalya. And without that greed, then one cannot. And how does that greed come through the association of one so qualified? So if one is associated, is it possible? Yes. Which is the answer to your question. Generally speaking, one is satisfied with my eternal relationship. You ask Panama, do you want to become a gopi? He just wants to serve Brahma. He doesn't want anything else to serve. He's completely satisfied. Through association, when they develop a hankering, then I'll get back to like where we are. Let us develop an eagerness to be in good service always. That an eagerness to become pure in our devotion, unmixed in our motivation for devotion to Krishna. That's like, you know, that's the word of marriage. And but then higher sight. Anything else?